far as the ultimate goal is concerned, I think none of us need have any apprehensions. None of us need have any doubt. But my fear, which I must express clearly, is this. Our difficulty, as I said, is not about the ultimate future. Our difficulty is how to make the heterogeneous mass that we have today take a decision in common and march in a cooperative way on that road which is bound to lead us to unity. Our difficulty is not with regard to the ultimate. Our difficulty is with regard to the beginning. Mr. Chairman, therefore, I should have thought that in order to make a start, in order to induce every party, every section in this country, it would be the act of greatest statesmanship for the majority party even to make a concession to the prejudices of people who are not prepared to march together. And it is for that that I propose to make this appeal. Let us leave aside slogans. Let us leave aside words which frighten people. Let us even make concession to the prejudices of our opponents. Bring them in so that they may willingly join with us on marching upon that road, which, as I said, if we walk long enough, must necessarily lead us to unity. And if I, therefore, from this place, support Dr. Jaikar's amendment, it is because I want all of us to realize that whether we are right or wrong, whether the position that we take is consonant with our legal rights, whether that accords with the statement of May 16th or December 16th, leave all that aside. This is too big a question to be reduced to the position of mere legality. It is not a legal question. I say leave aside all these considerations and make some attempt whereby those who are not prepared to come will come. Let us make it possible for them to come. That is my appeal. In the course of the debate that took place, there were two questions which were raised, which struck me so well that I took the trouble of taking them down on a notepaper. The one question was, it was asked, I think, by my friend, the Prime Minister of Bihar, who spoke yesterday in this assembly. He said, how can this resolution prevent the League from coming into the Constituent Assembly? Today, my friend Dr. Shyam Prasad Mukherjee asked another question. Is this resolution inconsistent with the cabinet mission's proposal? Now, sir, I think they were very important questions. And they, I think, ought to be answered. And answered categorically. I do maintain that this resolution, whether it is intended to bring about the result or not, whether it is the result of cold calculation or whether it is a mere matter of accident, is bound to have the result of keeping the Muslim League out. And I'll substantiate what I say. Sir, I invite your attention to paragraph 3 in the resolution, which I think is very significant and very important. Paragraph 3 envisages the future constitution of India. I do not know what is the intention of the mover of the resolution, but I take it that it is a sort of, after this resolution is passed, it will act as a sort of a directive to the Constituent Assembly to frame the constitution in terms of paragraph 3 of the resolution. What does paragraph 3 speak of? Paragraph 3 says that in this country there shall be two different sets of polity. One at the bottom, the autonomous provinces or the state or such other areas as care to join a united India. These autonomous units will have full powers. They will have also residuary powers. At the top and over the provincial units, there will be a union government having certain subjects for legislation, for execution and for administration. So as I read this part of the resolution, I do not find any reference to the idea of grouping an intermediary structure between the union on the one hand and the provinces on the other. Now, reading this paragraph in the light of the cabinet mission's statement, or reading it even in the light of the resolution passed, having said that we do not want a strong center, and having accepted that there must be or should be an intermediate polity, a sub-federation between the union government and the provinces, I like to know why there is no reference in paragraph 3 to the idea of grouping. I quite understand that the Congress Party, the Muslim League and His Majesty's government is not ad idem on the interpretation of that particular idea about grouping. But I always thought, and I will be prepared to stand corrected if it's shown that I am wrong, that at least it was agreed by the Congress Party that if the provinces who are to be within the different groups consent to form a union or a sub-federation, the Congress would have no objection to that proposal. I believe I am correct in interpreting the mind of the Congress Party. So the question that I ask is this: why did not the mover of this resolution make reference to the idea of having a union of the provinces or a group of provinces on the terms on which he and his party was prepared to accept? Why is the idea of union completely effaced from this resolution? I find no answer.